Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture with members of the But Why Though community. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Kate.
Hi.
And Jason.
Hello.
This week, we're going to be talking about the Oscars, like not as a concept, just like this year's Oscars and a little bit as a concept, but mostly this year's Oscars. But before we get into that, which will, I'm sure, be a good long conversation, we want to talk about the news because there's always a lot going on and a lot of it this time around. Well, some of it is fun. First up, I put this down here and you guys didn't question it being listed under the news, is the Willy Wonka Meth Lab experience.
Because it's amazing. It's so good. Like, you know what? Maybe AI is good for laughs, actually.
It's, if you guys don't know about this, Google Oompa Loompa Meth Lab. That's the start of it. Basically, these people used AI to generate all this promotional image stuff for just a Willy Wonka experience, which I don't believe was licensed, correct? There's no way.
No.
And then when you got there, it was like an empty factory. It was not even a tenth of what was promised. Like, they didn't even actually have chocolate there. And then they had two women dressed up sort of like Oompa Loompas at what looked like a meth lab, but like making candy.
Some company made, it's called like the Illuminati something. Like, that's who hosted it. And they had like a 15-page AI generated script, and they like made children cry.
Yeah, it was real bad. It was, there was like a villain who like lived in the walls in this 15-page AI script. I think I saw a thing that said that people were given like a cup of lemonade and a single jelly bean, like that was the food. At which point Matt told me that I did a deep dive. You can get approximately 1,620 jelly beans for $20 from Costco. So why they felt the need to ration it out at one per person is beyond me.
I did send pictures for you to look at them in the chat, Jason.
Oh, please do a live react.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, this is quite horrifying. And I feel like that last picture is just from Candyland.
It might be.
Look, all I know is that if you fell for the AI art and the weird hands, like
yeah,
not to absolve anybody from fraud, but also oh, yeah. Like if you open,
but what is going on with his hand in that picture?
Both hands. It's fantastic.
I didn't notice the hands until you mentioned them, and that is terrifying.
But it's so bad.
That's. Like, are these truffula trees or are they lollipops? What is going on?
No one knows, but every time I see a tweet about it, it gets worse.
It gets better.
So yeah, if you guys have not heard about that somehow, go look it up. It's amazing. Moving past that into kind of sad news, don't worry, we end on a slightly better note. Sony laid off like 900 people, just continuing this trend of massive video game layoffs.
And today, EA laid off 670.
Ooh, okay, yeah. And then, what now, was the 900 layoffs from Sony also when they closed their London office?
Yep.
Yeah,
oh,
okay.
But
and I think...
I would like to say, I'm going to inject it right here. What I did like... I didn't like the layoffs at all. Let's first say that. But what I did like is that because of the way that Sony did their release as an international company, people are starting to wake up and understand that if you have federal worker protections or national worker protections, you don't get told to it sucks to suck, because that entire mm-hmm. outline was Americans, you're terminated as of today. People in the UK were entering negotiation phases with the regulators. And then in Japan, we're setting you up for your next job. And it was all laid out. People got to see it, and it doesn't minimize that those people are losing those jobs in those countries.
Yeah.
But those people are being taken care of in a different way than just like sucks to suck. Bye.
Yep. And I'm saying Americans are getting like literally kicked to the curb on
yep.
this.
Because we don't have federal regulations.
This is your weekly reminder, everybody, to mark your calendars for May 1st, 2028, general strike.
Yes.
We're all doing it. Get your
be
unions
cool.
on board.
It's going to be great.
Start a union before then if you don't have one. And, you know, let's save our lives at this point.
Please.
Yeah, honestly.
You've got four years to get your union together. Let's do it.
And then the last piece of news, I don't know if you guys saw this, but apparently there is a little bit of hope for those Funimation libraries that were getting
yeah.
deleted. Where basically Sony's like, we're going to try to make good, like either getting you a copy on a different platform getting you a download, like doing something to continue your access. It's just that we are not going to facilitate that library.
Yes.
Which this isn't unheard of. I remember you, this is going to date me, but do you guys remember the Flixster streaming service back in the day? Yeah. I had some movies on there, and when they closed down, they were like, hey, you can throw this over to, I think, Vudu. And so I moved it over there. And then there was a very brief window where Target wanted to have their own video streaming service called Target Ticket. And I had that, and that closed down. And so I got to take my movies. And the thing with that was, I never bought any movies from them. They were giving away 10 free movies when you signed up, and it didn't cost anything to sign up. So, yeah, I still have movies from that that have been allowed to carry on to other libraries. So it was encouraging to see that Sony was like, hey, we hear you. We recognize that this isn't great. Yeah. This is what we're going to try to do. I think the only thing that sucks is you have to initiate the conversation. From what I understand, like Sony's not reaching out.
They do it in the same way that like Joe Biden made you apply for your student loan forgiveness. They're hoping some people don't do it so they can save money.
And hopefully the Supreme Court doesn't block it.
Supreme Court weighing in on Sony and the Funimation libraries.
Which I will say the other piece of news to come from this as well, since like this is Crunchyroll CEO, I don't remember if it was today or yesterday, actually said that they will be rolling out AI translations.
Oh, no.
And that's the future of the translation industry, which isn't even like the right thing to say. Like writing captions for a series is not just translating. It's also localizing. Like it's a lot of work.
I feel like they are about to learn real hard the whole spirit of the law, letter of the law thing, because like translating literally is not a good idea basically ever.
Yep.
And this is going to bite them when they put out some really hokey, terrible subtitles.
Yeah, I've watched things with like literal translation captions before, like because it's the only option. And it's not entertaining. It's not good.
No, I'm like, we've done this.
I've only done it
y'all?
Because, like, research. Like, I'm not going to do it for fun.
No. So, like, what is wild to me about the AI translation piece is that we have been here. Those were fanlations. Those were people going into Google Translate and spitting it out. That is what happens when people pirate things. And then you go and you buy the real thing because it has better translations. Yeah.
I was going to say, are they trying to push us back to piracy?
With this. Circle back to last episode.
Yeah, honestly, though, like, because this is pushing us just back to where they're like, hey, we're going to make the product actively worse. And it's like, if it's going to be worse, we'll just go back to doing it the worst way we did before, which was also free.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like they can't create generative content if they get rid of all of the people that they're generating off of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have smart AI that builds new creative things if all of the creative stuff that you are trying to feed it to learn from gets destroyed in the first place.
So we can survive for machines to learn long enough that they actually need us, we'll be fine.
Right, but like, what are they going to do? Like, train AI models off of 2010 movies when we're in 2030 so that we can have things that are no longer culturally relevant, like people won't consume that. Like, that's just not, I don't get the logic. There is no logic. It's just profit and short-term profit at that.
Always short-term profit. Honestly, just the true enemy of the last, 80 or like 40 years, like since the 80s. Is that about right?
Blame Reagan. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's always Reagan's fault. It's fine.
Always Reagan's fault. Oh, actually, that also brings up another thing I just found out, is that the Lost Media pilot for Boondocks, it's like a 6-minute pilot that they used to pitch the show to Fox, has resurfaced. Apparently, it was like gone for a while, but it is now on the Internet Archive.
Oh, I love that. We need more. Like, this is a time in our history where we need a new season of the Boondocks. The youngins probably couldn't handle it, but we need it.
We do. We really do.
No, they would say it's too inappropriate.
They would.
They'd say that it's like it's culturally insensitive.
I mean, isn't that half the point?
Yes, exactly.
Like, all right, you guys want to move on to the main segment?
Yes.
All right, let's get into the Oscars. This, for those of you listening at home, isn't going to be exactly a normal episode. We're not like discussing award seasons or breaking down the history of the Oscars. We just wanted to talk about the awards this year and the nominees. It's going to be like more like a fire hose of information and feelings. So hopefully that's fun for you guys. I think it's going to be a lot of fun for us. I personally did not make it to the theaters as much this year as I had hoped for. So I'm going to be kind of playing more of a straight man and asking questions and kind of interjecting where it makes sense to. How much did you guys see of the nominees this year?
I think I've seen almost everything. I haven't seen everything off the short list, but I believe I've seen almost all of the nominees just because I have to vote in them. Yeah. Not in Oscars, but like I have to vote
other award shows
in awards things. I think Jason, like you watched like literally everything.
Yeah, I've seen like most of the movies that have come out this year, which is like for better and worse. Of the movies that are nominated, I haven't seen a lot of the shorts because most of the shorts are always bad. Let's just be real. They're the shorts categories are often just filled with like trauma porn, and that's not interesting most of the time.
Bold of you to assume the rest of the nominees aren't filled with trauma porn.
Yeah, like they're shorter, so it's more concentrated. And I just, why waste my time? I've seen a couple of the animated shorts, but that's really it. And I don't always watch most of the documentaries because some of the subjects just don't interest me. But I've seen two of them, I think, of the five. And then
yeah, I've only seen three of the documentary films.
I think the only other ones I missed basically are like Perfect Days because Neon wouldn't let me see it. And I didn't feel like going across town to the one theater that was showing it yet, though I'm sure I'll watch it soon. I didn't see Napoleon because I didn't want to spend 3 hours in a theater watching a movie everyone said was bad, but I'll probably watch it when it comes out on Apple in the next couple of days. And I didn't see Flaming Hot, but I can always just listen to that song on Spotify, I guess. I have 20 minutes left in Rustin. I did not finish it before we started recording.
I did not watch Naiad because I couldn't be bothered. I don't care. I deeply do not care.
I also didn't see Robot Dreams because I don't think you can still.
Yeah, you can only watch the Neon book. Oh, Napoleon. I also didn't watch Napoleon.
Sorry, the one you just said that its name I'm now blanking
Robot
on.
Robot Dreams.
Yeah, that I had literally never heard of before looking at these lists. So it's just not something that was widely released here?
No.
It played at some festivals, and so people have seen it.
Okay.
It's the only reason I know it exists, because like it played at a couple festivals, and people said that it was good, and obviously enough people said it was good because it was nominated over some other movies we'll talk about, but it's like not coming out. It's not available even like in, because I forget where it's made. It was not made in the US, but it isn't available in the country it was made in either. Like even if you turn on a VPN, you can't rent it. So it's going to be that one that no one will have seen by the time the show comes around in a couple weeks.
Yeah. I say that will be the one that, when they're reading through the nominees, everyone's going to go, wait, what was that? What the hell is that?
Yeah.
Okay, so this year, if I can count, I did a quick survey. I think like just over 50 films were nominated across the 24 categories, including short films and documentaries. 15 of those got more than one nomination. The top five being from first to fifth, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Killers of the Flower Moon, Barbie, and Maestro. So, as someone who did not make it to theater as much this year, Which of these movies, or just which movies in general, are kind of your favorites? Like, what are you pulling for and wanting to see pull in those awards that it got nominated for?
Just from what is on this list, right? Like, just these?
I mean, from, like, the multi-nomination ones, because being like, I mean, we're all rooting for Godzilla Minus One to get Best Visual Effects, but, like, that's the one award.
Well, Godzilla should have been for Best Picture, but Killers of the Flower Moon, and I think that's because I had a really visceral reaction to that movie. And I also think it's like the larger impact of like that movie made my mom try to have us I forget the word for it, but like just brought back into the tribe were Kickapoo. My grandfather's side of the family was Zapotec, like from Mexico. And then my grandmother's father, they were Kickapoo, and he, because of like assimilation in Southwest Texas, like it was mm-hmm. one of those things where like we just like lost connection. My mom watched that and it made her so angry that she decided to try and find his birth certificate and like get us reinstated into the tribe. But and so like it is one of those things where, like, I think I'm pulling for that movie harder than anything because I do think it is just a very good movie and I love what it does. Because it is not mm-hmm. a movie for Native people. It's a movie for white people to feel and see like the violence that they have committed by either actively doing the violence or just sitting back and watching. And I think that that mm-hmm. is the only type of movie a white director could have told. It's what was told. And I respect the hell out of it for doing that. And then like I'm pulling for Poor Things and Barbie after that because Poor Things is like a step away from porn and Barbie is like a pink genre fantasy. So like I just want weird movies to win if Killers can.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer can go suck a rock.
How do you feel about, and I'm not sure if you've seen this like half joke, half hot take that Poor Things is just a Frankenhooker remake?
I agree with that. I agree with that, and that's why I like it.
Okay, cool. Jason, what are you kind of rooting for?
I feel pretty similarly to like basically everything that Kate said. Killers of the Flower Moon is way up there for me, for all the same reasons. I spent a lot of hours watching really long Martin Scorsese movies this year. At the end of having watched many of them in a row, went to go see Killers, and I was like, on top of the fact that like this is the only way that a white person could tell this story and it was done really effectively, it's also like the culmination of this one old white man's journey over 40, 50, whatever it is, years to like learning mm-hmm. about masculinity and learning about the way that he's portrayed men over time and like coming to his own terms with, you know, going back to Taxi Driver and the way that he kind of valorized bad men and over time has learned like actually bad men aren't good, they're bad. And this yeah. is the ultimate like movie of a man learning over 50 years and trying to teach the rest of us the lessons he's learned, and I just respect that a whole lot too. And
definitely
it's a tough one of the like Lily Gladstone versus Emma Stone because they both do a lot with two very completely different kinds of roles, and it's like great that in the mm-hmm. Golden Globes they both get to win because they're in different categories, and here I think that I lean towards Lily Gladstone just because of a lot of the context of the role that she like the role that she had to play in this movie and being able to do what she did with it. But it's also the same is true of Emma Stone what's her movie called?
I think to that point, I think that Lily Gladstone for me takes. I think that Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone are like miles above everybody else in this category. Like personally,
yeah, not even close.
Because they both had to do very different things with their acting, and I think that it makes it really hard to compare them. And Emma has to show like literally like the evolution of a woman in one role. And Lily had mm-hmm. to put so much emphasis in the quiet moments. Like she couldn't lean necessarily on dialogue. She couldn't like her performance had to be a visceral one. And there's that scene in Killers of the Flower Moon when she finds out that her family's died and she screams in the basement. And it is shocking. Like it is gutting. Like it is one of those things where, and I think being able to do so much with much less is why I think it makes Lily stand out in that category. And I think to Jason's point about masculinity, and I hadn't really thought about it. I mean, I thought about it like when I first watched the movie, but thinking about it in like retrospect, in the courtroom scenes in Killers of the Flower Moon, it is very specifically Native women. And they and he says that multiple times. Like, the prosecutor says the killing of Indian women over and over. And it's one of those things where there's a recognizing of where you are in the position of retelling a story and also understanding who is most impacted by it. And I think that there's just, it's an art. It's an art. Like, I walked in there expecting to hate it. I don't traditionally like Scorsese movies. And I walked out floored. Like, just entirely floored.
It's that, as someone who has not yet watched this movie, it's on my list to get to in the near future. Something that has genuinely been very interesting to me is the way that the discourse around it and Scorsese has gone. Yeah. Because I feel like people were kind of hitting that point of like, I'm over it. I've seen what he does. It's just kind of the same movie, like same beats, same people over and over. And then for him to come out swinging with something that's like way, way, way out of what he would typically do, presented with a focus he wouldn't normally grab, like, and seeing people be like, actually, yeah, this one, I am glad he was nominated. I am glad it was nominated. That's been really interesting to see.
And I do think, to Jason's point about him learning, is that we know that this script was the script that was made. Was not the original script. We know that he actually did grow and learn as he made this movie, and I think that that comes through. I also think there's just something very endearing that, like, all, like, whenever, so they paired up Leo and Lily for everything, and anytime somebody would ask Leo a question that could be answered by Lily, he would give it to her.
Right.
Like, perfect. Constantly.
Love that.
Like, somebody asked him, like, what was it like to mentor Lily? And he's like, well, Lily, how is it like for me to mentor you? And I think that that is something that, like, being, like, knowing when you should not be the focus. And I think that that is what they've been able to do.
It's easy to look at this movie and go, it's just a movie about a bunch of bad men being bad, and it's swallowing up the energy from the people that it's supposed to be about, because it wasn't made by Native folks. It was made by Martin Scorsese. And that's just not what this is.
And I think, I think it really culminates. It's how he ends the movie for me. Like, he ends with that radio show and he himself delivers the final line. And it is, sorry that I'm ruining this, Alex, but
No, you're fine.
It's really beautiful and it's really stark. And then the last shot of the film is of the Osage today. And it's gorgeous. Like, it is one of those things where it is like, because that's the other issue with, like, stories about Native people, right? Like, they all mythologize Indigenous people. They all pretend like Natives no longer exist. And this film could have easily done that, because it is about a literal genocide taking place in Oklahoma to take their land, to take their money, to take the head rights. But it doesn't do that. At the end, it's like, no, the Osage did not die as a people. They are still here, and they are still breathing, and they are still surviving, and they are still living. And I think that that is what I think gives the film the power, in addition to what Jason said, to like, that's why I think it should win everything it's nominated for, personally.
Yeah, in a world where Barbie didn't have two songs nominated for Best Original Song, A Song for My People, which is the English name of the song that's playing in the end of the movie, was also nominated, and absolutely, I'm rooting for it because of what you just described. It's not gonna win over What Was I Made For, but if in a world where Barbie didn't come out the same year, it would be a really, really good contender, because it's just, it's not even the song itself, which is obviously, it's a, you know, good song, but like, just the power that that moment has in the movie is easily the most impactful of any of the songs that are nominated, I mean, most of the time, let alone this year.
Yeah.
Which I do wonder how often that's sort of not an official criteria, but the use of the Best Original Song, I feel like, kind of should weigh in on what is the best original song. Cause like, I'm sure that there are songs that have been nominated where it's like, yeah, that was great, but it was like, it played for 30 seconds in the background of one shot and it did nothing to, you know, impact the film, versus like something like what you guys are describing, where it's really well done as a song and then very intentionally put into the film.
I feel like there's kind of like, I'm sure there's more than three, but I'm thinking about like three different kinds of best original songs that get nominated. There's the ones that are the like, what was I made for? The soundtrack song that you're like, it pops on and it fits contextually. And honestly, like, it's also a good song. It fits. It's a good moment
it's
that it comes on.
It's also like, yeah, I was like, it's also like the end of the movie. It's the realization part of Barbie. Right. It is in the movie. It's not just the soundtrack song.
Right. I mean, soundtrack song is in like, you like it's a song and you recognize that it's a song. That's what I meant by soundtrack, not like a piece of the score. There's the song that the song of our people by people that's more like the song that you notice it, but you're not like thinking about that it's a song and it's got words. And then there's the like category that shouldn't be allowed to be nominated, and that's the song that is just playing in the end credits and you didn't even know it existed.
Yes
Oh yeah,
and I hate those ones. Even though they're like sometimes very good songs, I'm always like, what?
Oh yeah,
this. Where did this song come from?
Well, even looking at this category, I loved Flamin' Hot. I thought Flamin' Hot was really good. I don't know what the hell that song is.
Right,
it's I didn't know that the there was. I feel like the Academy was like, oh crap, we don't have any Latinos. We have to put Flamin' Hot in here. And that was where it landed.
Also in this category, though, is the one nomination that American Symphony got for Best Original Song, instead of American Symphony being the John Batiste documentary that was supposed to be the, like, big documentary of the year and Netflix's only movie that they were pushing other than Maestro.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not nominated for Best Documentary. And let me tell you, I don't feel bad about it. I did not give it a good score in our review when I reviewed it back in November. And I don't know. Sorry, Netflix, if I tanked your Oscar dreams personally and single-handedly. But
I hope you did.
No offense to him either. Like, it actually turned me on to John Batiste as an artist way more than I expected it to. I like. Just, you know, he's the guy that you see with the harmonia, the melodia, whatever the instrument's called, that's a hand piano that you blow into, and he just looks goofy, and he is just goofy, but he's like actually like a fun goofy guy, not a weird goofy guy.
I'll have to check that out. But you said it's not good, so check out his music, not the movie.
Yeah, like, if I could like get a clip show of the best parts of the documentary, that would be good, but the documentary is not about him. It's about his wife who has cancer, and like, he can't decide whether to make it about her or about him. And so it just, the movie's incoherent. Like, it's not that any part of it is isn't interesting. It just, as a film, doesn't work. And that's a shame, because I think that it's an emotional story and he's a really interesting artist, and it just didn't come together in the way that the movie probably thought it was going to.
I would like to switch focuses, because I hadn't looked at the nominees for makeup and hairstyling. Why the hell is Barbie not in here, but Golda is?
Oh my god.
Excuse me?
I mean, yeah, let's just get into that.
Excuse me?
Like, as a whole, like, aside from the obvious, which we're gonna get to, where did they just like miss the mark on these nominations?
That one?
Like, what got overlooked? Like, yeah, what else? Like, read through this. Tell me where it's trash.
I historically do not like the animated film selections for any award shows, because it is very U.S. focused, and it is very traditionally very. It is U.S. focused. It is usually children focused, because those people only believe that animation is for children and it's not a medium. Mm-hmm. So the nominees are Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Robot Dreams was not watched by anybody. It does not belong there. I do not think that you should put film.
Yeah.
And I won't force anybody to put in Blue Giant, because it wasn't watched by anybody. But at least that had a release date. In the year 2023.
Yeah, at least it played for one.
And could have been watched by people. That is also the best animated film of the year. Blue Giant, it should be available to buy, I think, in March. So
it just seems insane, to have movies that are inaccessible, not in like the artistic analysis way, but inaccessible in a very literal way. Like, you cannot get this movie.
Yeah.
Why is it eligible?
And then Elemental is just there because I don't believe that they wanted to block out
Pixar.
Disney. Yeah. They didn't want to block out Disney by putting Suzume in its place or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, which honestly, that's my like big when I was looking at things that got nominated, where I was like, how did that, like, in terms of animation and style and effort, like, that easily should have been nominated, especially over Elemental, I think. I mean, Elemental probably, I don't know, like, they did water okay, and water is really hard to animate, but, like, outside of that, it looks like most Pixar movies.
Yeah, it's like, not bad, but it is literally everything we have seen from Disney and Pixar.
Exactly. Like, yeah. I'm not down on Elemental the way that I know a lot of people are, but Suzume and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles absolutely both deserve to be nominated over this. They're both substantially more creative and innovative movies. Like, TMNT in particular, I reviewed that for the site back when it came out. I knocked it for a couple of particular things. But even with that, like, it is a really creative and interesting rearranging of this adaptation, and it's a really, really interesting and cool animation style and art style. And what is Pixar's movies these days besides
it's just another Pixar,
the same exact look to everything? Not to say that some of their recent movies haven't been good, like, I really do love Turning Red and love Luca, but it's still the same, and like, it didn't quite work for this one the way that it worked, at least for those others.
That's also, like, one of the things that is frustrating for me is because I think that there is just so much, like, I love Turning Red, but the storyline is essentially Encanto, only instead of a grandma and a kid, it's a mom and a kid doing the same thing. Like,
yes.
everybody is working through the same very specific type of trauma that their maternal figures put on them. They're still good movies, but I think that, like, Pixar and Disney Animation has really stalled as, like, an animation house and a storytelling house. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you have something like Suzume, which was a film, as much as it is about fantasy and, like, time travel, it is also a film about reckoning and your reckoning with your grief and processing the entirety of, I think it's, is it 3/11, March 11th, when the Fukushima nuclear disaster and the tsunami happened? That is what that film is about. And so for that not to make it in here, but Elemental does, or Robot Dreams does. And
Because this isn't the trauma porn category.
It has to be fun. And Robot Dreams is a good movie. Like, I'm not dogging it. I have watched it. It is very good. But, like, nobody, I do not believe you should put things on here that people cannot go watch. It helps nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, you have things like this slipping in where it's like, I truly don't know why this got on there unless, like, a bunch of people really, really liked it who were voting. But also, we know that not everyone watches everything that they vote on. So, you know, who's to say?
Yeah. My category with the most things that I wish were slightly different is the international features. I've watched 14 of the 15 shortlisted movies, and I've seen plenty of the other ones that were submitted by their individual countries that were not shortlisted. And
you can read all of that on ButWhyThough.net. He did a cool article, except for Perfect Days.
You absolutely can read my thoughts on everything, including Perfect Days. My thoughts on Perfect Days was just that I haven't seen it, so I can't tell you. But
good thought.
I don't dislike any of the movies that were shortlisted or nominated. I don't think that they're bad movies. I just like some of the other ones more. The one that I wish was nominated most certainly is Taste of Things. Which, you know, unto itself, a whole piece of controversy that we can, I'm sure, touch on in a bit about how it's the movie that was nominated by France, but also Anatomy of a Fall is French and got many nominees, but because their director doesn't like the prime minister, they didn't nominate it. And then the Academy decided not to nominate Taste of Things either, which just is crazy because that movie is quite good and rather special in a lot of, like, production ways. I mean, if you listen to anybody who worked on that movie talk about it and the way that they like literally had to create entire feasts to make this movie, like how do you, anyway, but that's my big one in that category. The two movies out of the five in there, like Io Capitano, it's a fine movie, but it's, again, it's one of those like trauma porn movies of we're nominating it because it's the traumatic one. Yeah, that's the main one in my, like, what was not nominated at all is Taste of Things. Mm-hmm. But the movie that I wish people liked more that was nominated many times but will absolutely not win anything is Maestro. I loved that movie. It was one of my favorite movies of the year. I haven't seen it since I saw it in theaters. Maybe if I watch it again, I'll, like, see what everyone says about it and why they didn't like it. But I thought it was such a great movie, and I feel bad for Bradley Cooper and how badly he wanted this and is just not going to get it. Mm-hmm. But I also just don't understand people's like huge dislike of this movie.
As far as I know, from just what I remember seeing online, I think a lot of it started with those first still images that came out where people got real hung up on the makeup and the prosthetics. And then I don't think they ever got past that.
That's what I want to ask you, Jason, like as a Jewish guy, like because literally what Alex said is the only stuff that I saw bashing it. Like, I saw people saying, I'm not going to watch this because it's appropriation, or I'm not going to watch this because this is happening. And I feel like it just got thrown away because of that. Even when the family of the guy was like, no, actually, we wanted Bradley to play this role.
Yeah.
And we worked like, with him.
This is a movie that's been in development for like a decade and a half, and Leonard Bernstein's entire family was involved with it and really excited about everything about it. And that's funny because, like, I forget that was even a controversy, because in my circles, like, no one cares and everyone was mad about it because they wanted, like, the true Leonard Bernstein biopic. And they're upset that this is a movie that's, like, not about Leonard Bernstein. It's about his marriage and about his wife and, like, their love. And that's why I like it so much, and it's why a lot of people don't like it. They wish that it was a more traditional biopic. And I get it a little bit, I guess. But the prosthetics and makeup of it all, I actually think this is the movie that I would consider the one I want to win, perhaps, because it's genuinely just really, really good prosthetics. And, like, sure, Bradley Cooper's not Jewish, and giving him a big nose can look a little weird in a still image the way that it did when you, like, know Bradley Cooper's face so well and know that Leonard Bernstein is a man with a big nose, and it's kind of a little like they gave him a longer nose instead of a wider nose because it fits Bradley Cooper's face better the way that it looks, instead of making him look exactly like Leonard Bernstein, who was also short and fat, which Bradley Cooper certainly is neither of those things. So, like, it's jarring when you look at a still image, but when you're watching the movie, like, they hired one of the most successful and award-winning prosthetic makers in history to do it, and he does an incredible job. Like, the movie takes place over several decades, and over the course of the whole movie, you're seeing him get older and older, and it just looks really good every time he ages up, between the hair and the makeup and all of the prosthetics, and I was actually just wickedly impressed watching it, to the point where I wasn't thinking about it in any kind of like, ooh, is this an anti-Semitism way, because it wasn't intended to be, and I didn't take offense to it.
Well, and I think that's part of why that controversy was so ridiculous, because it was like, here's a still image, you have no other context, there's no movement, no voice to it, it's just here's a picture of how we made him look. And people zeroed in on that and were like, let's get mad about this one thing, where it sounds like as soon as things are literally set in motion and you hit play, it stops being about that. And you see him as a whole human being. And like, it kind of, I don't know, it feels like that argument is based solely on a still image. And if you give the movie the time of day and watch it, it's not nearly the crisis people tried to make it out to be.
And I watched it based on Jason's review. Like, I wasn't going to watch it primarily because, like, I just don't really like, not docu. I don't like biopics that much. Like, I think, like, there has to be something special about it.
Neither do I particularly
Yeah, it just didn't interest me. But then I read Jason's review of it on the site. And I was like, oh, this is about a marriage? Okay. And I watched it. I was actually pretty blown away with, like, the perspective. And, like, the film is a shocking amount of weird that is nice. Hmm. Like, it is not, like, your standard biopic, really. Like, there's, like, enough weirdness and there's enough, like, hard edges to the relationship that I think just, like, really work in a way. Hmm. So that was probably one of my biggest surprises, honestly.
And it wasn't nominated for editing, which is, like, wild to me because this is one of the reasons people don't like it is the editing. But to me, like, the editing is a huge part of what made this movie so successful. It's, like, the way it's edited, things just are happening at such a clip the whole way through, and there are just these several different times where they do a creative little camera twirl, and, like, you're suddenly in a, like, a funky dream ballet dance sequence that the way that it's strung together, it annoyed other people, and that's why they don't like the movie, but I think that it was done in a way that accentuates everything that the movie's trying to say about who he was and who his relationship was to his wife and to the men around him that he was also in relationships with. And, like, without the way that the movie was edited, I don't know that it would have been as effective to me at trying to explain that this is a person who is actually just full of himself and all of the ways that he thinks, all the ways that he thinks he's complicated are actually just, like, not that deep.
Yeah, man, I just, again, every, like, the times that we've talked about this movie, like, you sell it incredibly well, and it makes me want to see this movie, and I need to just, like, make a checklist and start going through it, because there's this, and there's so many other ones that I've been missing, but, yeah, I feel like this is one that kind of got overlooked, and again, the more I hear about it, it just feels like that was a mistake, largely, just, like, everything that we've talked about, like, that we alluded to it earlier, but there's this one big thing that kind of happened that we haven't got to, which is Barbie was put up for Best Picture, Best Supporting Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Adapted Screenplay, 2 Best Original Song nominations, Production Design, Costume Design. Now, what it was not put up for was Best Director or Best Actress.
I thought the Barbie stuff was stupid because I think they totally erased the fact that America Ferrera got nominated. But I can tell you why that was. It's called racism. But I actually think that where the real snubs for Barbie happened was in cinematography, it was in costume design, and it was in makeup and hairstyle. Like, the fact that that film doesn't get those, like, that is frustrating to me for, like, to no end. And even editing, too, to be honest. Like, the way that that film is edited and just... So though, like, that is really, I think the overall discourse was really dumb because it focused on Margot Robbie, but Margot Robbie is technically got a nomination. She's nominated as a producer, which is arguably what Margot Robbie has been trying to do. Like, I respect the hell out of Margot Robbie because she is one of the few people who has said, I have made it into the room. Now I'm going to fight like hell to get movies made by other women. And I think that that is something that's really respectable. And it's also why I love that she has the chance to get something as a producer because of that.
Well, and Greta was also nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Exactly.
Like, both of them, they were left out in the obvious places, but they were included in the nominations. But like you said, the conversation shifted to, we left them out. I mean, even like Ryan Gosling talked about, like, this film doesn't exist without them. Like, it feels bad that I got nominated and she didn't, because she didn't get directly nominated. Yeah. Like, she'll get an Oscar if it wins Best Picture. It won't be Best Actress.
Yeah.
It's tough. I think for me, the only time where it gets kind of weird is when something pulls in a ton of nominations, but then doesn't get thrown in for Best Picture. Where it's like, how could you have the best in all of these categories, but, like, you're not the best overall? But I think that with this one, it was just kind of a, it was in like the top five of overall nominations. So I don't know that I feel like the production itself got snubbed. And I can see where people got misguided with it. But like you said, like America Ferrera got her nomination. Also, like her speech is like the thing, like that monologue is like the thing from that movie that people like walked away with.
Exactly.
So
that movie, like she's the crux of the movie. Like she's the core of it.
Right. She's the emotional heart of what's going on there. Mm-hmm. And exactly. The Oscars only know how to deal in drama. They don't understand how to nominate something for its comedy or for its popular appeal. And so America Ferrera being nominated makes sense because she's the dramatic part of the movie.
Exactly.
Then again, Ryan Gosling is not necessarily the drama of the movie, but it's, because like I look at the leading actress category and like it's Annette Bening in Naiad, drama; Lily Gladstone, drama; Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall, dramatic; Carey Mulligan in Maestro, dramatic; Emma Stone in Poor Things, it's comedy, but it's also drama, and like
it's a weird dramedy.
Yeah, and like I won't even go down the Anatomy of a Fall rabbit hole because I want to stay on Barbie, but man, do I not understand that movie. The Barbie of it all, I there's part of me that's like, yeah, well, they got the $1 billion, so do they really, like, how bad do I have to feel about the people that weren't nominated?
Yeah.
But they also are nominee worthy performance and directing.
Also,
so I'm like, yeah, maybe it's a little like of a bummer that they're not also nominated.
Look, I'm a genre fan. None of the things I want get anything other than maybe original screenplay or adapted screen. Like, that is the award that they throw to them.
Or best comedy with Get Out.
Oh, yeah. I was just talking about for Oscars, but yes.
A visual effects nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, that is what's frustrating. And I think that, like, I think that Barbie cut such a large slice of people that they thought it could get more. But I'm like, no, this is actually something that genre fans have been dealing with for a very long time. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, I remember you when you were, I was
why
thinking about it when you
John
were talking
Wick
about
Chapter 4 nominated for Best Cinematography.
Yeah, that's wild.
Well, and like when you were talking about Killers of the Flower Moon and the basement scene, I remember when Hereditary came out and then Toni Collette got completely skipped over for Best Actress. And it was like, did you guys not watch Hereditary?
And that was a dramatic role. Like, that is the crazy thing about Hereditary.
Yeah.
That is a dramatic role. Like, it's a horror movie, but that is a dramatic actress.
Oh, yeah. There is a straight minute of her screaming and sobbing that is the most, like, visceral, upsetting thing. And I was like, that alone, I thought would get her at least a nod. But nope, nothing.
Yeah. So I think that, like, Barbie is nominated for multiple things. It wound up in Best Picture,
which is honestly like miraculous. Given what you just said, like this is
not
100%. Typically a movie that's getting any of these kind of nominations.
Is this like the happiest movie that's been nominated for Best Picture in recent memory? I'm looking.
Possibly.
last year's Best Picture: All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar: The Way of Water, Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, The Fablemans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, Women Talking.
Not a single happy movie in the bunch.
No,
the year before that, Belfast, Don't Look Up, Drive My Car, Dune, King Richard, Licorice Pizza, Nightmare Alley, Power of the Dog, West Side Story. Like, we don't nominate happy movies for this category.
No,
Top Gun's,
I will,
you know, the closest, I guess.
Yeah, that's the closest. Yeah. No, I will say, like, one of the shocking things, and I think that, like, with a lot of the Barbie discourse, I don't think it was actually taken into account, like, the state of, like, all of the categories, really. Because if you look at a lot of these acting roles, like, these movies aren't nominated for bests. Like, Colman Domingo in Rustin, which is crazy, because I don't think Rustin is a particularly good movie. But I think Colman Domingo is damn good in that movie in like in a way that is just, it eclipses all the bad wigs and bad backdrops that they do in that movie. Or like Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. Like, Like, I think that there is just a lot that can happen in these other categories where there is always something that, like, may get an acting award but is not nominated for anything else. Or or Godzilla Minus One of it all getting, like, it is hands down the best war movie that I have seen in, like, the last decade. And all it got was, you know, effects. But yeah, like, I think Barbie fans need to just put their... One, check their racism, and two, put everything into perspective of like the larger Academy, which is rough, because I know I don't do that when, like, Disney movies get nominated for animated. I just yell. So I guess I should learn that lesson myself too.
I get it. Also, quick correction: Everything Everywhere All at Once won last year, so I guess sometimes we do happy movies.
That's not a happy movie, dude.
What do you mean? I cried watching that so much.
That's not a happy movie.
I put it as a more optimistic movie, I guess I should say. Not happy, but, like, ultimately optimistic in its intent.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Uh-huh. It's a sad journey.
It is.
As soon as those rocks come on screen.
Not happy. That's the wrong.
I cry until the movie ends.
That rock scene is so good. It's so good. Anyway, this is not about that. This is about Barbie.
My other Barbie thing is, like, I know why people are arguing about it. It was nominated in different categories and different awards. But, like, why is it an argument that it should not be best adapted, like, in the adapted screenplay category? It is adapted from an IP that exists. I don't care if the story is wholly original. It's still an adaptation. I think that's an incredible thing about it. Like, we all said this when it came out, that, like, this is one of the best and most creative and most, like, on point adaptations that we've seen. It's one of the best examples of how to take something that is a well-known and beloved property and do something wholly original and creative with it.
Yeah.
It's still an adaptation.
I think that larger question goes back to, I think a lot of people watched it, they feel a certain way about it, and they need it to be wholly original. Like, they can't, like, it is a movie, it is a movie about a toy. It is a movie about how that toy makes people feel. It is a movie about the things that have been put into that toy. Like, it is ultimately a damn good adaptation, like you said, because it's looking at its IP and then looking out at what its IP has caused very, very specifically. And it never loses that. And that writing an adapted screenplay like that is, in my opinion, even harder than writing an original story, because you're working within somebody else's toolbox and you're having, like, it's like, hey, go build this thing, but you can only use these tools, and you have to make sure, like, if you don't have a wrench to, like, do whatever wrenches do, you got to find another way to, like, build the thing. And I think that that is a level of ingenuity and creativity that it gets more shine for in adapted. So I'm all with you, Jason. I don't know why people made it a big thing.
I also think a lot of people forget that Will Ferrell played the CEO of Mattel in this movie.
Yeah!
And that is an entire integral part of the plot of this film. Like, I think that a lot of us forget about that part when we're trying to pretend that it's not ultimately still an IP movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, literally, there's the whole Skipper incident.
Like,
right.
But yeah, it is. I mean, like you said, it is based on a toy. It is not original thoughts.
And a lot of the fact that it's based on a toy means that you go into this with a preconception of the kinds of feelings you might have, or the kinds of ways that you will or won't connect with that story. And so even if the movie itself breaks some of those expectations, as a good adaptation should, the whole point of the fact that it's an adaptation means you do go into it with some kind of bias or some kind of expectation around what it is. Which is why I love adaptation, which is why we all do, like, because you have that.
Yeah.
I guess on just a sort of closing question about the Oscars in general, do you guys feel like things are improving over previous years as far as, like, what kinds of movies get nominated and what kinds of movies win?
No.
Because we got the one fish movie, and then they were like, that was too much, we're going back.
The best point the Oscars have ever been in was when Return of the King swept. When that was a sweep, that was
a pretty high.
That is at its peak. Like, taking home 11 Academy Awards as a genre film. Like, no, I do not believe that Oscar voters watch everything. I do not believe that they get beyond the scope of what they have. I do believe that they vote for their best friends. I do believe that they don't know that more than one Latino can exist in any place given or time. And I do think that this is ultimately a very white year. And they snubbed a lot of people. Like, why the hell is Annette Bening in here? Huh? Why is, why is Jodie Foster? Nobody watched Naiad. Nobody cared about that stupid movie, Netflix.
It was a perfectly fine movie, and they're good performances, but why are they, like...
Like, where is Fantasia Barrino? Where is Fantasia? Why is Danielle Brooks nominated but not Fantasia? Like, that is the real question.
Makes no sense to me. My favorite thing about the diversity conversation in this year's Oscars is that American Fiction, it's not a bad movie. It's not like an incredible movie. I don't think it's bad, but what's so funny about how many nominations it got is that the only reason why it got these nominations is because white people watched this movie and said, oh my gosh, this is so impactful.
Yep.
And that's like literally what the movie is about.
And that's the whole joke of the movie.
So like, I give it all of the credit in the world for pulling it off, for convincing white people that they had a deep message, because like they watched this and they fell for exactly what the movie's about. And it's just incredible, because I don't think it's a bad movie, but I don't think it's that good. And it's certainly like Sterling K. Brown's performance. What? Like, that's not nomination worthy. Like, it's just so funny. Overall, for me, the Oscars, like, none of it means anything. Half of the awards go to movies that I don't think deserve them. For me, I love the year leading into it, because I love watching as many of the things as I can get the opportunity to before people start making public opinions and trying to force us all to think that Oppenheimer is the best movie that was ever made. And I love going to my Oscars party with all of my friends and celebrating a year of watching movies together and having a good time. Like, that's what's special about it to me more than anything, is that like all year long I watch movies with different people and watch movies by myself, and then talk with my friends about those movies that they saw by themselves because we couldn't find the time. And then we all sit around the TV and yell at it for making bad choices about the things that we felt passionate about all year and had, you know, great laughs at and good emotional times. And like, that's really what the Oscars is celebrating to me. And it's the friends that I get to enjoy movies with.
The real Oscars is the friends you made along the way.
Pretty much.
That feels right.
I do think that the Oscars matter for one category, and that is international film. I think that the Oscars is the one time a year where people will venture outside of their comfort zones of American cinema and look at films that are in from other countries. I think what sucks is that the Oscars is, while it is very drama focused from its overall voting for all of its awards, it's even more so in that category, but a lot of that has to do with the politics of the countries themselves and how they choose what goes forward. That being said, I think that that is the one thing that it does, is it gets people to watch things that aren't American. And I think that that is what you can take away. And I want people to realize, like, that the Oscars and the movies in the Oscars, it's not the end all be all. It's American focused. It's Hollywood focused. There is a gigantic world of cinema and genre and like just storytelling outside of that. And I think if there is anything that you can take away from the Oscars, is to actually invest time and look at the films that you had no idea even came out and go watch them. Other than that, I'm usually getting drunk at a South By party during this, and I get to watch Film Fest people scream at the TV, which is like really fun. So
that actually sounds pretty great. Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for this week. But before we go, do you guys have any articles that you want to plug, or any of these movies specifically that you want to be like, hey, go watch this?
I would say that Colman Domingo is the best male actor of our generation, and he needs to be recognized for it in any way, shape, or form. Do anything you can to watch anything that this man is in, because he is a queer Afro-Latino who puts everything into every single role. That man does not know how to come, like, halfway. Like, he is just... He's so dynamic, even in things that aren't good. And so I think go watch his stuff. But I will be doing South by coverage by the time this comes out. If you want to catch anything, please just head to the site, click the little South by Southwest tab. I am hoping that I get tickets to Monkey Man, because that is the one movie I care about. Because it's directed by Dev Patel, produced by Dev Patel, written by Dev Patel, and starring Dev Patel. And I ride or die for that man. So I am very excited for it. So you can catch all of that on the site.
Excellent. Jason?
Yeah, nothing super particular. Back a couple weeks ago, earlier in February, did some stuff around Valentine's Day and romance movies on Netflix. The ones that are the least bad, because there's a lot of bad ones, and sometimes it's fun to watch bad movies and sometimes it's not, and I watch a lot of both of them. And you know, subscribe to our Patreon so you can listen to me talk about all of the things that I watch that I actually do like, including that I have this list I made of the top movie in 101 languages that I haven't seen, and I think that probably 84% of them are some way or another about trauma, but I'm keeping stats. I have a whole spreadsheet that I've made about is this movie about trauma, and whose trauma is about, is it about, like, so I'm curious to see what the numbers show at the end
you
of this.
You should just like read anything Jason has written for the site where it involves him going to the Library of Congress to watch films that he can't get any other way because he's a completionist. That's what you should do.
Yeah, I also endorse this.
Like Colman Domingo, Jason also does not know how to do things halfway.
And we love him for it.
Yes.
Couldn't be me.
I do not have that dog in me.
On the plus side, now I own a copy of Carlos Sauer's Carmen, so I don't have to go to the Library of Congress the next time I want to watch it.
Yeah, I was gonna be like, which Carmen is it?
Nice. I'm really happy for you. Now that does it for this week. If you liked what you heard here and you want more, you're in luck. We are basically everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch. We've got a Discord. And if you want to kick us a few extra bucks, we have a Patreon, and kicking us a few bucks there kind of is what keeps things going and helps it so that we can make the content that you love, both here and on the site.
Please,
if you want to find
killing us.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, the internet's just getting worse, guys. We need your help. We need your support.
Give me money now. Money now, please.
It's the only way to hear me talk about movies like Where is the Friend's House?
I have no idea what that is.
It's a classic Iranian movie about how much homework is bad.
Well, now I want to watch it because that's just a fascinating pitch to me, because that's such a simple concept.
It's a really cute little movie.
I'll have to check that out. But yeah, and then you can find me specifically on social media, on Twitter at most always Alex. Kate, where can people find you?
You can find me at Oh My Mithrandir on Twitter and all of the other places, because I was smart enough to get my username on everything.
All right. And Jason?
I'm on Twitter at flatter_you. And you can't find me on other platforms because you can't use underscores on them. So I gave up.
Smart man. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next time.